today, the Filipina domestic workers stranded by the pandemic. In affluent homes all over the world, you'll find Filipina women supporting families as their nannies, housekeepers, and cleaners. The Philippines government estimates that around 3 million women from their country are acting as domestic workers abroad. When the pandemic hit last year, many found themselves stranded. Corinne Redfern, a journalist from the Fuller Project, has been tracking their stories, including those in the UK. And some of the examples she has found are really shocking.
One woman who I spoke with, called Phoebe, she told me that the stories of abuse or of exploitative working conditions are so well known within the domestic workers community in London that she can walk down Kensington High Street and see all of these huge fancy flats and houses, and she can list the stories of violence that take place behind each door.
All this abuse is happening inside the house, you know, inside these big houses in Knightsbridge, inside these big houses in Kensington, you know, in this wealthy places in London. Nobody knows what's happening inside.
From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, the Filipina domestic workers trapped by the pandemic.
Good evening again.
Corinne, you've been reporting on the experiences of domestic workers from the Philippines working across the world. And I want to start with one of the women I know you've been talking to who works for a wealthy family here in Britain. We're going to call her Mimi, although that's not her real name. Tell me about her and tell me what a typical day was like for her before the pandemic.
Mimi is from the Philippines and she lives and she works in West London.
Well, I woke up 6:30 and then eat my breakfast and then take a shower.
Every day she leaves the boarding house. She walks to work through West London because she can't afford the bus.
Yeah, 7:30 I need to leave. Like exactly 8 o'clock I am there and then...
By 8 a.m. or so, she's at the house.
When I arrive, I need to prepare the snack for the kids to bring in school, the water bottle, and then check the bags if everything was there, check all their things that they need.
As soon as she gets to the house, it's immediately, it's all go. She has to prepare the packed lunches for the children. She has to get them ready for school. She would take them each to school. Then she'd come back and she'd be cooking and cleaning for the whole house.
I need to fix the kitchen. I need to fix the beds, the beddings. I need to clean the house. I need to clean the toilets. I need to wash.
She'd be preparing the evening meal for the whole family. She'd be running errands, the husband and wife who employ her.
Bring the box in the post office, for sending the parcel or bringing it to the UPS, the errands. I am doing everything.
And then by the afternoon, it would be time to pick the children up again, bring them home.
Because before I'll go to the activities, during the day, I already prepared the dinner so that when we come back, I just give them the dinner. Then they take the shower. And then I play a bit. I help do homework. I am the one who are telling that you prepare your clothes for tomorrow. I mean, I'm giving instruction to the kids what they will do. If the kids are sick, I am the one who are with them in the hospital, in the clinic, in the GP.
Wow, it sounds really full on.
They are very busy parents.
What do they pay her?
They've been paying her £5 an hour for the last 8 years since she first started working for them in 2012.
What do you mean £5 an hour? That is way below the minimum wage. How do they get away with that?
They get away with it because Mimi's employers know that Mimi isn't going to report them for it.
And the amount you're talking about is tiny. I mean, a typical nanny working in London would earn almost three times as much. Does she need to do other work to get enough to live?
£5 an hour obviously isn't very much. It only adds up to about £1,200 a month. And around half of that goes straight on her rent.
Even if it's 1,200, it's the income that I have is not enough.
So she is accepting whatever jobs she can get at the moment to top up her income. She works from 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. Monday to Friday, and then she crosses the road and cleans neighbors' houses until 1 or 2 in the morning.
On the other street, I work from 8:30 to the one I told you, 2 a.m. cleaning. Could you imagine standing the whole time, the whole day? At the age of 52, it's very tiring. But if I can hear the news from my children that they're doing well, I feel happy. And
what's been driving her for the last 20 years or so that she's been working as a domestic worker overseas is the idea that she'll be able to support her own children's education and give them a better life.
It's always sending back. No, for myself, just for my family.
Mimi has three children. The youngest is a 19-year-old girl who's studying at university at the moment. And Mimi knows that if it isn't for her salary, then her daughter won't be able to finish her education.
I am the breadwinner for my family. My husband has no job.
And how has her life changed since the pandemic?
Mimi told me that while last year in the first lockdown, while everyone else was being told to stay at home and to prioritize their own safety, her employers made her continue going to work, even though it was completely illegal at that point. And they coached her through exactly what to say if she was stopped on the street by police.
I'm still going every day, and they told me if there's the police asking me, I would just call them, and because there's the permit to go.
Obviously,
to work.
Now she's allowed to go to work, but she's still very concerned about her own well-being. Her employers haven't provided her with any PPE. The only thing that's changed is that her workload has increased, because now she has to disinfect the whole house every morning and clean all three of the toilets. And she also has to oversee all the homeschooling. She has to oversee extracurricular activities that now are taking place inside the house. So she's doing ballet with the children in the living room, or kind of coaxing them through language lessons late into the evening.
Do you think the pandemic is worsening hidden exploitation more broadly?
In the first 2 months of the pandemic, the Kanlungan Filipino Consortium, which is this London-based consortium of organisations advocating for migrant rights, they carried out a study that found more than half of Filipino migrant workers in the UK had lost their jobs in the first 2 months of the pandemic, while others reported that their wages had dropped to less than £2 an hour.
£2 an hour?
Yeah, which is considerably less than national minimum wage. The conditions are obviously very extreme, but there's very little recourse.
Okay, Mimi's not on £2 an hour, but she's clearly being exploited. Why doesn't she quit?
So when Mimi first arrived in London, she had this 6-month visa, and her employer told her that he could help her arrange this new, more permanent visa for her.
I had just a 6-month visa. After 6 months, we apply for extension, but I was refused. And then we appeal.
But Mimi has been scared to leave ever since then, because she believes that visa is tied to this particular job. And from her understanding of the situation, if she was to quit, then she would become undocumented and she would be forced to return to the Philippines.
So you're stuck in this situation where you can either work legally and get the visa with your employers who pay you £5 an hour, or
yeah,
if you were to leave, you then risk becoming undocumented. And
yes.
And why is that?
Prior to 2012, there was this 12-month renewable visa for domestic workers to work in the UK. And it was really quite straightforward. it provided them with some very basic protection. So if they experienced abuse, or if they were underpaid, like Mimi, they were experiencing violence or sexual harassment, then they could leave their employers and they could find work elsewhere, as long as they had an employer who would be sponsoring their stay in the UK. But in 2012, David Cameron's Conservative government was trying to cut the number of migrants arriving in the UK down to less than 100,000 a year.
So that's how we're changing immigration in this country, getting net migration down radically, making sure that the people who come here, wherever they come from, are coming for the right reasons. We want people who are interested in what they can offer to Britain to contribute to and to enrich our communities.
So they got rid of the domestic workers visa and introduced this new visa, which was a tied visa, which meant domestic workers could only stay in the UK for 6 months at a time, and they couldn't change their employers at all during that time frame, even if they could prove that they were experiencing abuse.
If you came here, you must just stay with your employer. You cannot change the employer. That was the law that was being changed 2012, I think, April.
Naturally, yes. This has posed a lot of problems. Many domestic workers don't leave at the end of the 6 months because they want to stay in the UK and continue to work. So they become undocumented instead. And as soon as they become undocumented, then they're in an even more vulnerable position because they're even more scared to ask for help. They're worried that they would then be arrested and deported instead of receiving any support.
And that was all because of that immigration target?
That's where this all stems from, yes.
Is that still the situation now?
The situation has changed a little bit since 2012. In 2016, there was a large-scale campaign by a lot of non-profit organisations, domestic workers and media outlets, including The Guardian. And so the Home Office updated regulations, and now domestic workers can change employers, but only during the first 6 months of their stay in the UK. And they're still expected to leave at the end of that six-month period.
Is the fear from government that they will try and settle permanently in the UK?
That certainly seems to be the concern.
But the government just, you know, why they don't give us the right to stay here and work? We are not here to stay forever. We're just here to work.
What I've been hearing is actually that what this does is just push thousands of migrant workers to become undocumented, because the alternative is to leave, go back to the Philippines and lose that income stream altogether.
And how typical is the story that we're hearing about Mimi? How typical is it for women to be working those hours, but also to be paid those rates?
So it's impossible to know how many foreign domestic workers are experiencing abusive working conditions in the UK, largely because so much of this abuse takes place out of sight. Most of these stories kind of circulate within the domestic workers community, but the data is very limited. In 2019, the UK government issued more than 23,000 visas to migrant domestic workers, and more than 10,000 of them come from the Philippines. The organisations who I've been speaking with across the UK say that this kind of exploitation is rife and that it is taking place across the whole country.
What other types of stories have you heard?
I've heard stories of women who are expected to sleep on the floor, to sleep in the bathtub.
In the bathtub?
Yeah, to sleep in the bathtub. There are women who are experiencing physical abuse, sexual abuse, psychological abuse. They're having their salaries cut to such an extent that the women are only eating maybe one meal a day so that they can send as much money as they can back to their families.
Is there anywhere these women can turn for help with their situation?
There is a lot of grassroots activism around this issue at the moment. Non-profit organisations such as Kalayan and Voice of Domestic Workers have all been campaigning to change UK law and reintroduce the 2012 domestic workers visa. But on a more immediate level, A huge amount of the services that I've come across in recent months have been within the community of domestic workers themselves. So every few weeks, Mimi and her housemates will end up getting text messages or calls from women across London who say that they need to get out, that they're being abused in some way or another, and that they need to leave. So what Mimi will do in that situation, she'll finish her work late at night, and then she'll take a series of night buses across London to wherever the woman works. And she'll wait outside for the woman to sneak out of the house, all the while texting her messages of support and advice, making sure that there's another adult in the house to take care of the children and so forth.
Anytime, any day, we rescue our fellow migrant workers. We even rescue different nationalities, not only Filipinos.
And so when the woman finally emerges, Mimi will bring her back across London to the boarding house where she lives, will make her a bed and ensure she feels safe. And then again, a couple of hours later, Mimi will get up and go back to work again, as if she hasn't spent the whole night traversing London and rescuing other women like her.
Coming up, we hear from a woman in Bahrain who is trying to escape from her employer. Corinne, it's worth saying that clearly lots of women from the Philippines are not being abused or exploited. They are working successfully with families. But it certainly sounds from your reporting like these kinds of problems are not uncommon. It's so shocking to hear about women like Mimi rescuing other women in the middle of the night. And this is an issue in many parts of the world, not just Britain, isn't it?
The International Labour Organization estimates that there are 11.5 million migrant domestic workers worldwide. And statistics from the Philippine government suggest that upwards of 3 million Filipino women are working in the sector, which could mean that one in four migrant domestic workers comes from the Philippines. But the methodology behind a lot of these calculations is quite hazy, and it's often based on projections kind of rather than firm data, because obviously, again, it's very hard to track when so many people working in the sector end up staying beyond their visas and becoming undocumented.
Tell me about some of the stories you've heard.
One of the women who I've spent the past 6 months speaking to is a woman in Bahrain.
You know, I have a dream last night. I'm dreaming I'm in the house, in my own room, and then I see the face of my father. And I hear he calling me on my dream, but when I get up, it's only a dream.
She's called Rowena. She's in her mid-50s and she works as a cleaner in Bahrain. And she told me that she had actually been meant to fly home to the Philippines in April after finishing her year's contract at this cleaning company.
So I decided to buy my ticket, but the COVID is coming. I cannot go home.
But just before she was due to leave, her flight was cancelled because of the pandemic.
I stay here. And then my boss tell me and tell us, no work now, we stop. We don't have customers, so you need to go back home.
And that same month, her employer told her that because of the pandemic, his own income was constrained. And so he now couldn't pay her salary anymore or the salary of any of her colleagues.
But I cannot go because the airport is closed. So I'm waiting the open of the airport. But the airport now is open, my ticket invalid. How come? How can I go?
So instead, he told Rowena that he would provide all four of the women with the equivalent of £20 every 2 weeks to be split between them all. So they would have roughly £5 each to cover all of their food and needs every fortnight. So Rowena found herself completely trapped. She doesn't speak Arabic. She didn't know how to get into the center of the city and ask for help. She didn't know where she would go if she was to try and take public transport. And then The country was in lockdown anyway, so she wasn't allowed outside. So she found herself 7,000 miles away from home in this empty office building that she used to clean with absolutely no income and no way to get back to the Philippines. And at the same time, that's when her boss started to sexually harass her and she believes to sexually assault the other women who he also employs.
My boss also trying me when I'm alone here. He asking, when I kissing like that. Crazy, I said like that. And then I locked the door. How many times he asking me like that? And then sometimes, you know, I have a knife on my hand and then I make like to his face. Okay, you come here like that. And then one time I kick him because he touched my boobs. Very bad, right?
She sleeps on a pile of blankets underneath a desk in the middle of an office. And in the morning, she wakes up first thing at 6:30 so she can roll the blankets away and very quickly get out of the office and hide before her boss can find her.
Oh my God, is there anyone who can help her?
Rowena doesn't think there's anyone who can help her. Flights have started up again, but it costs between £300 and £400 to fly from Bahrain to the Philippines. And to her, that's a small fortune. She reached out to the Philippine government in May last year to ask for help getting home and also to apply for this tranche of official financial assistance that the Philippine government was distributing to all of its foreign workers, which was the equivalent of about £150. But they didn't reply. And after a few months passed, she kind of gave up trying. In December, the Philippine embassy finally got back in touch with her and they sent her an email arranging a meeting for the next day. And thankfully, Rowena could find a way to get across the city to the embassy. And when she got there, she received this £150 of financial aid. But when she told them about her situation, that she no longer had any source of income other than this £150 that they had just provided her with, they said that there was nothing that they could do and that she just needed to wait it out and they'd be back in touch in the future. So as it stands, she feels very, very much on her own.
What's her situation now?
So Rowena's situation really hasn't changed. Every day she wakes up and she hides from her employer and she has very little to do during the day. She passes the time making TikTok videos for her grandson.
I dance in TikTok if I feel lonely.
Please send me that.
Yes, later.
In September, her employer told her and her colleagues that he now couldn't afford to give them this £20 allowance every fortnight anymore either. So she's had to start picking up informal jobs within the community, which she can sometimes earn about £20 or £30 a week tops. But it's also very precarious work because her visa has expired and she isn't allowed to keep working in Bahrain anymore. So she's worried that if someone was to find out that she was working, she could go to jail.
Wow. I mean, she's in total limbo. Kind of hard to feel positive about this situation, not just for Rowena, but for tens of thousands of women. What were you left feeling at the end of your reporting?
I've been speaking with these women for the best part of a year now, and I think what struck me the most is how little has changed for them in this time. Back in May, everyone was very sure the pandemic wouldn't last very much longer and that help would eventually come, the situation would change. And now 10 months or so have passed and they're still completely stuck. There's a very strong sense of resignation. Most of the women that I've been speaking to, like Mimi and Rowena, they've been working in this sector for 20 or 30 years. Moving between families in different countries, raising other people's children so that their own can go to school or university. And for them, these low wages and long hours or the threat of violence or sexual abuse or assault, that's nothing new. That's just part of what this job involves. I think it's really important to acknowledge that these problems already existed and that it's been very bad for very many women for a very long time.
And what about Mimi? Have you spoken to her recently? How's she doing?
Her situation, again, hasn't changed in the past few weeks or months. She says that she copes with the pain of leaving her own children by giving all of that love to the children that she's raising in the UK instead. So the idea of leaving them despite these working conditions is incomprehensible to her. One thing that Mimi and other domestic workers in the UK remarked on is that they don't understand why there are so few protections in place for them when the work that they're doing is so integral to the country's economy and to the fabric of everyday life for so many families.
I hope that they will acknowledge what are our worth, what help are we helping in this country and for the economy of the country. Because how can our employers be sitting in their office working without us? We are the one who are shaping the minds of the children because we are with them longer than their parents.
Corinne, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Anushka.
That was Corinne Redfern from the Fuller Project, who has been reporting on the plight of many Filipina domestic workers around the world. My thanks to her, to Mimi and Rowena, as well as to all the other women and organisations who contributed to this investigation. You can read Corinne's piece on this at theguardian.com, where you can also find her previous work. I also really want to urge you to watch a new Guardian Films documentary, Colette, which is all about a woman returning to a concentration camp where her brother was killed to mark Holocaust Memorial Day today. That's it for now. This episode was produced by Mythili Rao. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.